So, Rabotai, I wanted to thank Bobby. He's not here, but hopefully he'll come. I assume you got a hold of this, or maybe you got it on your own. I got it off the internet, but I wasn't able to figure out the mechanics of sending it out to you, so he was helpful. And we're talking about Yom Ha'atzma'ut, which is coming up next week, actually. And there's an essay here by Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. Now, part of this essay is Agadita, you know, just in terms of the Hashkafa, what should we think about the Day of Independence of Israel? And parts of it, just I would say the third part, one third of it is about Halacha, in terms of Tachnun, in terms of Halel, whether to say Tachnun, not to say Tachnun, whether to recite Halel with a Bracha, without a Bracha. So I'm hoping we'll cover both parts, or at least major sections of it. I'm going to make some comments as we go along. I also found on the internet a very, very long tshuva on the topic of Halel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut from Rav Avadya Yosef. And should you want to find it, it's in a sefer called Shut Yabia Omer, Chelek Vav, Baruch Haim Simon Mem Aleph. And some of the issues that Rav Aaron touches on in his essay are addressed here in Yabia Omer. Again, each one is working independent of the other one, not knowing what it's about. I also found in Bar Ilan Shut Kol Mevaser, which is Rav Meshulam Rot, who is one of the outstanding leaders of the religious Zionist movement at the time of the establishment of the state. And he also has a tshuva here, Chelek Aleph, Siman Chaf Aleph, Be'inyan Im Lomar Halel, V'Shechiyonu B'Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik actually makes reference to this tshuva in his writing. So let's go through it. First of all, in terms of Hashkafa, he claims that if you take the Shiras Hayom as an example, Chazal say that it has to be written in the Sefer Torah where the letters are a third of the spaces. In other words, the spaces between the letters are two-thirds. That's called Chatzi Levena versus a Levena Shlema. And what are these black, you know, the black ink represents one aspect of Torah, and the other, the empty spaces, represent another part of Torah. And he claims that this is sort of parallel in literature to human prose and poetry. You know, it's prose is rational. It's formed by sentences and paragraphs, and we understand, we use our intellect to formulate prose. And then we have poetry. Poetry defies the rules of prose. And it touches on a different kind of wisdom. He says that the Tefillin Shel Yad, which is keneged the lev, represents Chochmas HaLev. And as a matter of fact, amongst the Tanoim mentioned in the Medrash, we find that Rabbi Eliezer maintains that it is the Chochmas HaLev, which is the Ikar of Chochma. And what Rabbi Lezer means is that any sort of chachma, which is intellectual, which is rational, has to begin first with the chachma salev. The chachma salev, the wisdom of the heart, it has its own set of rules and regulations, and that is represented symbolically by tefillin shel yad, which is connected to lev. And then after we put the tefillin shel yad connected to lev, now that we've focused and we've directed all our thoughts towards the Ribbono Shel Olam, all our feelings, based on the Chochmas HaLev, now we're ready for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, the wisdom of the heart. It's meaningless to have wisdom in the mind without first having wisdom in the heart. We'll never wear Tefillin Shel Rosh, I mean, I guess unless you only have one pair, but I'm saying if you have two pairs of Tefillin, we'll never wear Tefillin Shel Rosh without the Tefillin Shel Yad. We always have to have on the Tefillin Shel Yad. And that, according to Rav Soloveitchik, represents and reflects the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer in the Medrash, that Heichan HaChochma Metzuya, it's in the Lev. First, we dedicate our Lev, And that's the emotional part, that's the poetic part of the human being. The Torah also has, in a corresponding way, the Chochmas Halev, that's the Shira, that's the poetry, and it has then the Chochmas HaMoach, the logic of the mind, the rational part, that's the prose. And he goes on to say that if you can ask any questions about the state of Israel, its status, its significance in Hashkafa, then we're looking at the poetry, we're looking at the blank lines of the Torah. There's nothing in the prose because Chazal were not alive at the time of the establishment of the state. What we have to do is somehow rely on the Chochmas HaLev. The Chochmas HaLev is this intuition that is a result of understanding the Torah on a broader level. So again, you can't necessarily pinpoint one particular source in the Torah, whether it's in the Torah Shebech Sav or Torah Shebaal Peh, that addresses the state of Israel and its significance, but you have to use sort of that fifth sense, the poetic sense, and figure out that between the bricks and the black ink of the prose, there's also the poetry, and we have to figure out those blank spaces, and based on Chochmas HaLev, come up and develop some sort of hashkafa about Eretz Yisrael. Then he goes on to delineate three different reasons on the negative side, arguments against the significance of the state of Israel. In other words, if you want to ask the question, which is perhaps the most fundamental question in contemporary lives, are we anywhere towards the redemption, the ultimate geula? Is the state of Israel part of that process? Is it not? Then you're going to find three fundamental arguments against the state of Israel from a religious perspective, and these arguments have been repeated over and over again, and they're taking on, I think, more shall I say strength with the passage of time. In other words, I think, again, I have no scientific evidence for this, but I think that the commemoration of the state of Israel, its establishment, and of the Day of Independence is kind of falling prey to so many communities that hardly even recognize the day of the 5th of Iyar as a significant day. They say Tachnun, they don't bother saying Hallel. You know, in many, many circles, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, that's the paradox. It's a strange kind of thing. You know, the B'nai Akiva kids of yesteryear that were the, you know, they were at, in a sense, the pushing energetic force. You don't hear that anymore that much. You know, what you hear more is that Yom HaTzmaut is a secular day. It's like Canada Day, Lahavdil, and we just go on. And, you know, you have to, I live in a neighborhood called Har Nof where you have to look with candles to find any sort of minion on Hey Iyar that has a different kind of a, you know, of a tefillah in any way, in any shape, even as far as Tachnun is concerned, than any other day of the year. And some of you may realize, I don't know if you can identify with this, that our children that we've sent to yeshivas no longer feel the same way that we do about the state of Israel. And maybe even in a sense, they feel the exact opposite of what we do about the state of Israel. Like I talk to my kids and my grandchildren about the Six-Day War, and they hardly know what I'm talking about. And for me, it was probably the most important period of my life, you know. What are the three arguments? Number one, how could it possibly be that the leadership that established the Zionist entity was anything but religious? It was a secular movement, secular Zionism. The second argument is that if we're in the process of Geula, where's Tshuva? The Rambam writes, Ein Yisrael Nigolim Ela B'Tshuva, that the Geula has to take place through a process of Tshuva. Where's the process of Tshuva? And the third argument is, and this perhaps is the most popular argument, is that where is the Ness, where is the miracle? I don't see a miracle in front of my eyes. If the state of Israel is Geula, then it should be supernatural, and it should not be a natural process. There are other issues here that I would raise, which Rav Avadya Yosef, I saw, I didn't get a chance to finish the Tshuva, pages upon pages, but he raises the issue that in a state of Geula, we would be protected and we'd feel secure. And back in the day, about 15, 20 years ago, when he wrote the Tshuva, there were problems. And today, perhaps there are even greater problems. You know, our enemies around us are now, you know, have acquired new and very far-reaching kind of weapons. And we still have not achieved that sense of security and quiet and peace that would be typical of Geula. That's another argument. In terms of what we mentioned before, that the leadership of the movements that established the state were Zionist secular movements, they were not religious. We can add to that today that we see in many of the leaders of our government a certain objection against religion. You know, the state is trying to terminate the what they call a ptur for tzava. You know, they're trying to get every single yeshiva bacher to join the army. You know, with very little admiration for the study of Torah. That's an unfortunate situation. We have one of the most important leaders here in our country today who will openly violate the Shabbos, and he'll do it deliberately. We have also a major party here, which is a new party, relatively. If you know who I'm referring to, his father was anti-religious. He is a little bit less than his father anti-religious, but still, it's a very, very secular party, and they say it's the second most popular party in the state of Israel. Then we have the left-wingers, who represent a very outspoken minority, but a very, very significant minority on the left, and there's even the super left, and these people, by and large, have very little shmeckin of Yiddishkeit. So this argument that the Zionist entity is a secular movement, one might argue, is even more true today. On the other end of the spectrum, we'll talk about this later if we can, there are more yeshivas and there's more Torah learning today in the state of Israel, probably, than in all of Jewish history. Okay. Now, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik goes on to reject these three arguments. You can already begin at this point, which is early in his presentation, to get the sense that he believes that not only is the state of Israel a very significant establishment, a very significant part of Jewish history, but moreover, it's part of the Geula. And he's going to prove to you that despite all those three arguments, there's a counter-argument against each one, and there could be Geula even despite all your arguments. For example, he quotes Melachim Beis, an episode in Perek Zion of the Arba Mitzorayim, the four lepers. We read this in Haftorah. And what happens is that the Jewish people are facing their most formidable enemy, the armies of Ashur, of Syria. There's famine in the land. And a particular chunk, the northern chunk of Eretz Yisrael called Shomron, is absolutely in danger of being totally wiped out. And four lepers, four Mitzorayim, who are outside of the Machne, one of them is Gehazi, who's a very despicable character, by the way. If there's anybody in Tanakh that I don't like, it's Gehazi, but that's not for now. I find him fat. Anyway, he's one of the four, together with his three sons, and they're outside the Machne, and they have two choices. They can either stay where they are, and they're going to die because they have no food supplies, or they can surrender themselves to the Assyrians, and they'll probably be put to death immediately, but maybe that's better to die than to die of starvation. I don't know. So they approach the Machne of the enemy, and behold, a miracle of miracles. The whole Machne is empty. Things are left exactly as they left it. And of course, they start gorging themselves and going from one tent to the other, taking the best of the best and eating and so forth and so on. And then all of a sudden, they decide, hey, wait a minute, you know, we have a good besorah to tell Klal Yisrael, and we'd be guilty of an unforgivable sin. And they decide to go back to the Machne Yisrael and tell them that they don't have to worry about the enemy. And we see here something very interesting, that these mitzorayim, a mitzor is considered in halacha someone who's shavak himes, you know, he doesn't live socially within the community, he's completely quarantined outside the community. He is not only a physical mitzorah, but he's a spiritual mitzorah. And we can discuss that at great length, you know, what exactly is the sin that generates tzaras, but in any event, we're talking about four lowlives, so to speak, four sinners, and yet they were the shluchei akel, they were the agents that God used to bring about this tremendous, tremendous geula. So therefore, when you argue that how could it be that God brings about a deliverance to his people through the agency of apikarsim and kofrim, the answer is that could happen. And he quotes here a very famous statement in Chazal, which I don't know if it's exactly relevant. He thinks it's relevant here. Yisrael afal pishachata Yisrael hu, which means that a Jew is always considered a Jew. Perhaps it means that a Jew has within him some sort of role to play, even though he does not know and he's not aware and he doesn't even acknowledge that role. He's not aware of God, but nevertheless, he plays that role. That's the way he presents it. And therefore, the establishment of the state of Israel cannot be, you know, he can't poo-poo it just because it was a result of secular Jews. We don't know how and when God will use and who God will use as his shluchim to bring about the ultimate geula. He has another parasha also in Melachim Beis about another despicable character by the name of Yeravam ben Yoash, who is a replacement of a king that came before him, Yeravam ben Nevat, who was an even more despicable character. And Chazal tell us in the Yerushalmi and Shvius, which we'll come back to a little bit later, that under the leadership of this Yeravam ben Yoash, the boundaries, the borders of Eretz Yisrael expanded way beyond those of Yoshua ben Nun, from Hamas to Yom HaRava. So when you're talking about sovereign rulership of the Jewish people over the land, our dominion and the extent of our boundaries, the expanse of our boundaries, you're talking about a person like Yeravam ben Yoash, who was an outright idol worshiper, and his predecessor as well, Yeravam ben Nevat, who didn't even allow the Jewish people to worship God and come to the Beis HaMikdash. He put tzlavim all over the place. These were anything but tzaddikim. And in a very cute line, he says they're certainly not greater tzaddikim than Ben Gurion, and yet they merited to expand the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, when you ask the question, can a geula take place by Jews who are not committed in any sense or form to the religion, the answer is yes. In fact, during the reigns of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, the Jews were very dedicated to the principles of the observance of Torah. There was very little Avodah Zarah. The boundaries of Eretz Yisrael were very limited. And comes along Yeravam ben Yoash, and he's able to expand the boundaries. And that's really something amazing. At the end of this section, if you have it on page 11, he concludes by saying that why was Yeravam ben Yoash placed in a position that he could deliver the Jewish people and save them and expand the empire of Israel to such an extent of state? And his suggestion is that Yeravam ben Yoash lived at a moment in Jewish history which was absolutely critical. Hashem saw that there was such a crisis that he couldn't delay it anymore, and Yeravam ben Yoash was the man on the spot. And he uses this as a metaphor for Ben Gurion. You know, why would Ben Gurion be the one to establish the state of Israel on the 5th of Iyar? And the answer is because this is 3 years after the Holocaust, after the Shoah. It was a crucial moment in Jewish history. And he answers, he completes his presentation by saying that after the Holocaust, the Jewish people could not survive any longer without a state. The state of Israel at that point in history was absolutely critical for the Jewish people. And if I could add my own comment here, when I think about the moment we live in today, And again, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but if you take a look at what's going on in France today, and you know, at one point they were talking about 750,000 Jews in France. I don't know, today they're talking about a smaller number. But the situation is getting very critical. And let the European Jews live, you know, think that they live in security. I would have to say that I think they're fooling themselves. And lo me boy, the Jews in the Middle East from different Arabic countries that had to leave, there's got to be a place. You talk about the collapse of the Soviet Union. There's got to be a place on earth that can accept Jews. We know that even during the period of the Holocaust, those Jews who were able to get out, you know, where they were turned back by many, many countries. Nobody wanted them. Certainly the Brits here in Palestine didn't want the Jews. We desperately needed a state then, and we desperately need a state today. Now, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron's older brother, Zichron Levracha, wrote Sheish Tfikot in one of his six Tfikot, in which he's explaining the miracle of the establishment of the State of Israel, is the fact that the Jews now have a place to go to. You know, there's a refuge for the Jewish people, there's a homeland, and we don't reject the Jews. Today in Israel, as you know, there's a tremendous conflict and a major controversy about who we should accept into the land. We have all sorts of people that belong to other nations of the world. There's even another issue that's going to come up on the horizon, and that's so-called descendants of Muranos. I don't know if you read about this. You know, there's a whole group of people doing research, and they're coming to the conclusion that there are millions and millions of descendants of Muranos that are alive today, some of whom are trying to study their roots and their origins. And should we go actively and invite them to be part of the process here of building the State of Israel? Very complicated issues that may arise in the near future. I saw one number that absolutely shocked me. Again, it's probably a joke of some sort, but they claim that 1 out of 5 Hispanics in Latin America and in other parts of America are of Jewish origin. I know of one of them who works for Fox, and he's totally anti-Israel. Oh, you know who I'm talking about. Okay, fine. I'd love to see him get thrown out. And he's a very showman type of guy, big balgaiva. Somebody should just put a little pin in his balloon and blow up all the hot air over there. But anyway, he's viciously anti-Israel. Now, we get to the third argument. So again, let's just review. The first argument was the establishment of the state by the secular Zionists. The second argument, that Galut depends upon Tshuva. Well, maybe the ultimate Gula will depend upon Tshuva, but there are processes, as we'll soon see, in the Galut, and in the early stage, you know, the stage, for example, of Yerovam ben Yehoash, when Avodah Zarah was so widespread, we certainly weren't doing Tshuva. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu expanded for the safety and the survival of Jewish people the land of Israel. And that's true after the Nazi Holocaust. And therefore, even though we're not ready for Geula in the full sense, we haven't done Tshuva, but nevertheless there's a process, and this is part of the process. The third argument was that Geula must take place in what we call Lamala Miderech HaTeva, Biderech HaNes. It cannot be a natural process. And yet, when we think about the wars that Israel has fought over and over and over again throughout its history, starting with the Milchemet Kommiyut, meaning the War of Independence in 1947, 1948, we're not talking about a Nes Nigla. We're talking about something that seems to be part of a natural process. You know, in a Nes Nigla, everyone would survive. And we wouldn't have so many catastrophes. Next week we have a Yom HaZikaron, and I don't have to tell you the untold numbers of families that Rachmana Litzlan lost members of their families in the various wars or in terrorist raids and so forth and so on. Here, Abaron Soloveitchik comes up with a very fundamental Hashkafic idea. And he says that the Kates, which means the Geula, actually splits into two different categories. There's something called the Ketz Nistar, which means that the redemption comes through a natural process, and then there's something called a Kates Megula, which means it's obvious. You can just point to it and see that there's some meta-natural process going on over here. And he says the following, that he has proofs from Chazal that at least in the initial stages of Geula, there's something called a Kates Nistar, something which is not necessarily obvious, which is something that works within the natural process. Now, what would determine whether the Geula will be A, which means something that's metaphysical or meta-natural, or B, something that would be on a natural level? Is it going to be a Kates Nigla or a Kates Nistar? And he quotes a very famous Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin in the Agadita, in the last Perek, Perek Achelek, that seems to answer this question by presenting a resolution, a reconcilement, if you will, of a contradiction in Psukim. In one Pasuk, in Yeshayahu HaNavi, it says, Ani Hashem Be'itach Yishena, and in another Pasuk, in Yeshayahu, it says, that, just one second, let me get the psukim. One pasuk it says ata, and the other it says achishena. One pasuk seems to indicate that God will hasten the geula, and the other pasuk says no, it'll come in a slow process. Beita means it'll come at the end of a long process. Achishena means that God is going to urgently bring about the geula. And the Gemara, in the name of Rav Alechsadroi, reconciles this contradiction by saying the following. Zachu achishena, lo zachu be'ita. Means that if the Jewish people need the geula because of, or they're worthy of the geula, let's start the other way. If the Jewish people need the geula, even though they don't merit the geula, they have not done tshuva, but it's absolutely critical, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, lo zachu be'ita. It's going to be a slow process, and it's going to, so to speak, reflect the slow process of tshuva on the part of Klal Yisrael. And it's going to be significant steps of geula, stage by stage, but it's going to be enough to salvage, to save the Jewish people. If, on the other hand, the Jews have a massive movement of tshuva, then achishena, then zachu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, well, you've done tshuva, and therefore I'm going to bring about the geula immediately. And based on this presentation, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik claims that we're in a position, and the history, the modern history with the State of Israel, is a reflection of be'ita. Of be'ita means lo zachu. We haven't done massive tshuva. Again, there's a tshuva movement, but it's somewhat limited, and that's an overstatement. And therefore, if it's lo zachu, then the geula is going to come about as a Kates Nistar, in a very secretive kind of way, step by step, through the natural process. If in Mirtz Hashem we would all of a sudden do tshuva en masse, then it would be zachu, and the geula would take place immediately. And that would become a Kates Nigla. And he quotes another Agadita of Rabbi Abba in the same sugya in Sanhedrin. The Gemara talks about a pasuk in Yechezkel. This you'll see on page 13. And a pasuk in Yechezkel talks about a process in which all of a sudden the trees blossom, and all of a sudden the ground produces. And this is a simon of the Kates. This is indicative of the process of Geula. What does it mean? The land of Israel for so many millennia, so many centuries upon centuries, has been arid and dry and desolate. And that's a fulfillment of a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, Vashimosi Es Haaretz. And yet, even though nation after nation has tried so desperately to conquer the land and settle it and grow, you know, and make the soil into productive, no one for thousands of years has able to successfully do so. And maybe here we get into the concept of a Ketz Megula. Maybe, in a sense, the settlement of the Jewish people back in Israel is really a miraculous phenomenon. So the Romans occupied the land, and the Christians, and the Muslims, and yet it's only about 100 years ago, when the Chalutzim first settled in Israel, that after 1900 years did the land of Israel turn from a wilderness into a paradise. And this is a fulfillment of, as the Gemara calls it, a Ketz Megula, which is prophesied by none other than Yechezkel HaNavi. So again, if you ask the question whether or not there's significance in the establishment of the state from a perspective of Geula, and if your answer is, but wait a minute, things are happening too naturally, isn't really natural. It means maybe we look at it as natural. You know, the Chalutzim started, you know, clearing up the swamps and then and planting and so forth. But in a historical process perspective, if you look over the course of the history of the land of Israel, it's certainly not a natural phenomenon to be expected. And lastly, he says, and if you'll argue against, you know, the divine role here in the establishment of the state based on the Gemara at the end of Ksubis, the three Shvuos, this is what the Satmar Rebbe made so much of a big deal about, that one of the Shvuos that was imposed upon the Jewish nation as they went into Golus was that they should not return to the land by force, then he sideswipes the classical answers to this question, you know, whether it's the Balfour Declaration a century ago, whether it's the vote in the United Nations at the time in the establishment of the state, and there the nations of the world gave permission to the Jews to return to the land. He leaves that all out. He simply says the following. He gives you a mashal. What's his mashal? He's got a mashal of boats that are crammed with Jews, that it's overflowing with Jewish people, who have escaped the Nazi Holocaust, and they arrive at the ports of whatever country it might be, let it be Palestine or America, and they're not being let in. So now, you ask yourself the following question, what means are we going to use to get the Jews to survive this situation after the Holocaust? And find refuge? Are we going to say, well, we need peaceful means? Oh, please accept us, because otherwise we're going to perish. We took an oath that we're not going to take over the land by force. He says it's impossible. We have no peaceful means that are open to us. We have to fight against if it's the Brits or it's the Arabs that don't let us settle the land. And that's a counter argument against this famous shvua called Lo Yirmadu Bagoyim Lo Yalu Bechoma. Okay, this is all the hashkafic part of his presentation, and he ends with a famous medrash in Shir HaShirim. The medrash compares the Geula to Ayeles HaShachar, and it says that just like the morning, the dawn starts with Ayeles HaShachar, that's even before dawn, and then you get to the state of Amud HaShachar, which is dawn, and then you finally reach Netzach Hamo, which is literally daybreak, when the sun comes out and appears on the horizon. That's the mashal in the Medrash for Geula. Geula is not going to take place, as the Israelis would say, zbang, zbang meaning with just the flip of a thumb, you know, immediately. But it's a gradual process, a very gradual process. And I would add, it's a zigzag. You know, we sometimes move forward and then we move backwards. We take one step forward and then a couple of steps backwards. And he goes on to say, Rav Soloveitchik, that he believes that the mashal comparing the beginning of Geula to Ayeles HaShachar is very deliberate, because in the sugyas in Megillah, Masechta Megillah, as to when is the earliest time that you could fulfill a mitzvah that depends upon Yom, like for example Kriyas Shema Shel Shachar, or if you talk about Tefillah Shel Shachar, or Kriyas HaMegillah by Yom, we always need at the very least Amud HaShachar. Ayeles HaShachar is way too early. There's a period of time between Amud HaShachar and Netzach Chama, which is questionable. L'chatchila, we wait till Netz. B'di'evet, you can rely on Amud HaShachar. So he says, if we want to compare the establishment of the state to Amud HaShachar, then we're not yet in the thick of Geula, meaning we're in the pre-dawn of Geula. Maybe Rav Aaron would say today that we've already reached the state of Amud HaShachar. You know, we're not up to Netzach Chama of Geula, but somehow we've attained a more developed stage. That's how he wraps up his Hashkafic presentation, and he says that, you know, the Jewish people, in a sense, messed it up because there were so many opportunities for religious Jews to play an integral part, an essential part in the building of the land, in the settling of the land, and we didn't take advantage of those opportunities. And maybe since we're not part of the building of the land, we left it for the spiritual Mitzrayim to build the land. Maybe that's why we're holding at the Ayelas HaShachar stage, when we should really be way, way beyond that in the Amud HaShachar stage, and possibly even beyond that. And again, you know, this is one of the themes of Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, when he speaks about the Sheish Tfikot, and in the Mashal of Shir HaShirim, the Dod is there knocking on the door, and the Raya, the beloved, is unwilling to open the door. You know, she's too busy because she got into bed and she already washed her feet, so how could she dirty her feet and open the door? And this means missed opportunities. And Rav Soloveitchik, in that essay of Kol Dodi Do Fake, he claims that we missed some really great opportunities to be part of building the land. Once again, this is a very contemporary theme. Even as we speak, there are Jews making Aliyah, and it's fascinating to see how the Western Jews are very, very behind over here in Aliyah. You know, what's the organization called here? Nefesh B'Nefesh. You know, the Nefesh B'Nefesh. You know, every once in a while they have this major trip. You know, how many people are coming out of Aliyah? They got 250 people on the plane. You know, Shkaya, you know, 250 people doesn't really... Now, in Toronto, again, it's a little different because there everyone's thinking about Aliyah. And that's why we're missing Yechiel today, because he's already on the... You know, he's beyond the Ayelet HaShachar of Aviyah. He's mamish up to the Netzach Chama over here. So the only problem is that he's down in Be'er Sheva, so I never get to see him. But he told me he would like to join Ashia today, just that he's in travel. You know, he's on his way. Okay, now the question is, Hey Iyar. What's the significance of Hey Iyar? What happened on Hey Iyar? Was there any sort of salvation on Hey Iyar? Was any sort of even a Nes Nistar, you know, a Kates Nistar? Sachakol, the political echelon of the Israeli-Palestinian entity declared independence. We're gonna sign the Declaration of Independence. So what significance is there on a halachic basis to Yom Ha'atzmaut on the 5th of Iyar, which, by the way, this year is going to be, and this is so common, on the 4th of Iyar, they're going to celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. And by the way, I applaud that, because it's all for the sake of avoiding Chil Shabbos. And he says the following, he gives a very interesting mashal. You know, in America, for example, and this is true for any country, they celebrate the 4th of July. What happened on the 4th of July? On the 4th of July, they declared independence. And they signed the Declaration of Independence. But everything that happened because of what they attained on that day. Obviously, on the 5th of Iyar, there was, you know, we were anticipating the clouds of our enemies coming to attack us, and that's exactly what happened, and the war was a very significant war. But any military victory that happened, it happened because of the 5th of Iyar. So let's not just simply ignore the 5th of Iyar. So question number one is, should we be saying Tachnun on Yom Ha'atzmaut? See, he begins with an analogy to Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer, everybody leaves out what do you call it? Tachnun. There's no Nefilas HaPayim on Lag BaOmer. Now, if you talk about Lag BaOmer halachically, it's a bit of a problem. It's an enigma. When we talk about omitting Tachnun, it's usually because of a day that's vested with Kedushas Hayom and generates an Isur Malacha. Lag BaOmer clearly has no Kedushas Hayom. Nobody would suggest that we recite Hallel on Lag BaOmer, and yet we omit Tachnun. I'll give you another example. He says, what about Tu B'Av? You know, this entire sugi at the end of Masechta Tainis, what happened on Tu B'Av? And whatever happened on Tu B'Av, it justifies the halacha that we omit Tachnun on Tu B'Av. So let's go through quickly some of the various opinions about what the significance of Tu B'Av is. According to Rav Matna, Tu B'Av is Yom Shenitnu Meisei Beitar L'Kvura. You know that at the destruction of Beitar, the fall of Beitar, there were 500,000 Jews that perished at the time of the siege. And a great miracle happened on the 15th of Av, and the Meisei Beitar were given to Kvura. We have a whole bracha in Birchas HaMazon, the last bracha, that the Masake, because of this great miracle. What happened was, they were able to find the bodies of those who perished in Beitar, and they were able to bury them. As if to say God sent a message here that these are very courageous Jews that died for the sake of the Gvura of Klal Yisrael. And in truth, you know, this understanding, this element or dimension of Tu B'Av is somewhat sad, because, you know, the Romans destroyed Beitar, and that's something that we're remembering on Tu B'Av, but now miraculously they gave us, you know, the permission and the authorities allowed us to bury the mess. And that's enough to say that instead of reciting Kiddush on Tu B'Av, we're going to leave out Tachnun. So he says, Kal v'chomer on Yom Atzmaut, he says, if the 15th of Av is important because the martyrs of Beitar were buried, imagine how many hundreds of thousands of Jews that would have died because there was no entry into the land of Israel, because they established a state. They were able to find themselves in the land and live and survive rather than be buried in graves. So you have to admit, he says, that that relative to Tu B'Av, Yom HaTzmut, the 5th of Iyar, is a very, very significant day. And again, keep in mind that Rav Aaron is writing this, shall we say, 10 years after the Holocaust. Yeah, about 10 years after the Holocaust, 1965, 1966. So obviously, you know, the tragedy of the Holocaust, which is beyond our comprehension, you know, how many Jews were not given to Jewish graves, and they were burnt in the crematorium. And now we have a state, you know, in the state of Israel, which reminds me that I have to buy some grave plots here, because the prices just keep going up and up. Anyway, then we have a second opinion in the Gemara. Nobody laughs at my jokes, but that's okay. The second opinion is Yom Shekolu Bo Meisei Midbar. So on this day, you know, after the chait of the Meraglim, when God declared his gzera was that all the Jews of that time who were mature would die and perish in the Midbar, the day of Tu B'Av was the last day that those who were inside this, included in the Gzeira, would die. From now on, after Tu B'Av, the Jews would rise from the grave, so to speak. They would survive and they would live. And God, you know, had compassion on them and gave them an opportunity to live, even though they should have technically died. And once again, we can make a Kal V'Chomer about the establishment of the State of Israel. So many Jews who would have perished in the concentration camps, in the death camps, and yet they were able to come after liberation to the State of Israel. They found refuge, and Kolubo Meisei HaShoah. And the Gemara gives another answer, that a fellow by the name of Hoshea ben Ela, who was an Oved Avodah Zarah, he allowed the Jewish people, after Yerom ben Avad had forbade the Jewish people to observe the Aliyah L'Regel, he allowed them to come back on Aliyah L'Regel. And he says, how much more so today, where any Jew can come and be Mekayim the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Therefore, he concludes this presentation, there is no doubt that on the fifth day of Iyar, we should not be saying Tach. But what about Hallel? And here he makes reference to the tshuva that I told you about before, the Shut Kol Mevaser, of Rabbi Shulam Rot, who paskins that we have an obligation today to say Hallel on Yom Ha'atzmaut with a bracha. And Rabbi Aaron dismisses this shita of Rabbi Rucham Rot. He respects the fact that there are many Jews today who accepted that horah and will recite Hallel with a bracha. But he says, in poskim and from the sources, it's really just a far-flung shitas yochit. What is the basis for Rabbi Shulam Rot's psak? What was his havamina to say that we should declare this day as a day of Hallel with a bracha? What other day during the calendar year do we have, you know, that wasn't established by Chazal as a day of Hallel with a bracha? So this is based on a sugya in Arvei Pesachim, Kuv Yud Zayin, Rav Avad Yosef dedicates most of this tshuva to that sugya. Let's just read the Gemara's language. Gemara says, Neviim shebeineim tiknu lehem liYisrael shiyu omrim oso. They said there was a takonas on Neviim that the Jewish people should recite Hallel al kol perek v'perek, which means whenever that time period comes in the calendar, year after year after year, for all generations, on a day in which there was a tzara, some sort of very precarious situation that the Jewish community found itself in, and nigolim, and they were redeemed and saved from that precarious situation, from that dangerous situation. So we have to commemorate that day of redemption by reciting Hallel. Okay. First, we have to understand the following. Does this Gemara refer to a Chiyuv d'Oraisa or a Chiyuv d'Rabbanan? This is very important, because if it's a Chiyuv d'Oraisa, then Rabbi Shulam Rot is absolutely correct if you assume that great miracles took place and we were delivered, then we have a d'Oraisa Chiyuv of Hallel with a bracha. If on the other hand it's only a din d'Rabbanan, and that's the mashmos of the language Neviim shebeineim tiknu lahem liYisrael, that's takana d'Rabbanan, then who says that we have that authority as the Rabbanan to establish the fifth of year as the day of Hallel? And in fact, it's fascinating that most Rishonim, the exception is always going to be the Rambam, but most Rishonim, and this goes back even before the Rishonim, to the Shiltos and the Bahag, and then following in their footsteps the Ramban and many other Rishonim, hold that on a day of redemption, if the Tzibur experienced the salvation, there's a Chiyuv d'Oraisa to recite Hallel. Perhaps it's derived from the fact that Klal Yisrael recited Shira at the time of the Avdus L'Cherus, when they got to Yamsuf. However, those Rishonim hold that only on the initial day, when the experience of redemption took place, that's the Oraisa. But now to establish that day, forevermore, on the calendar, with every cycle, would be a Chiyuv Hallel, that is for sure a Din D'Rabbanan, a Takonas HaNeviim. Therefore, for example, no one would say that Hallel today on Chanukah is D'Oraisa. Hallel would have been D'Oraisa at the time when there was a victory over the Chashmonaim, over the Yevanim, and the Jewish people were spared. They would have to recite Hallel on a D'Oraisa level. That was a Tzibur that experienced a salvation. But we recite Hallel annually on those days in order to commemorate the original Nes. That's a Din D'Rabbanan. And the Gemara talks about why the Rabbanan decided to establish the days of Chanukah as days of Hallel. So it could be that Rabbi Shulam Rot would be absolutely correct, and there's no question about a Chiyuv Hallel with a bracha on Yom Ha'atzmaut for that generation, for that community of Israel that experienced salvation on that first Yom Ha'atzmaut. But 70 years later, that's already, in the best case scenario, a Rabbanan. And the question is, do the Rabbanan have the authority today, with all due respect, to establish a day as a day of Hallel forevermore? Now what's important here is the Me'iri, and this you'll see on the bottom of page 19. The Me'iri there in the sugya of in our Pesachim says the following: Kol Yachid She'ir Aso Tzara V'Nigal Min Rashay Likvoa Halal Yatzmo Bi'Oso Yom B'Chol Shana. A person who experiences a miracle certainly has a chiyuv, that could be Doraisa perhaps, but in terms of that individual establishing a day of Hallel for every year subsequent to the miracle, says the Miri Rashay, he's allowed to do so. He's not obligated to do so. In fact, he doesn't have, and even if the entire community was say they don't have the authority to establish a chiyuv Hallel, but Rashay, they're allowed to. So Rav Soloveitchik is perplexed by this meaning. What do you mean you're allowed to say Hallel? You're not saying Hallel with a bracha. What should be the problem of saying Hallel? You know, why was there a Havamina that, oh, you're not allowed to say Hallel? The Miri says, no, that in the context of this Takonis and Avim Rashoy Lomer Hallel, Bechol Shana Vishana. So Rav Soloveitchik says, and don't tell me that, which is the obvious answer, the Gemara says, Kol Omer Hallel Bechol Yom Areza Mecharef Umagadev. The Gemara doesn't allow us to recite Hallel just on any day. He says, this is not just any day. He's not getting up on a daily basis and reciting Hallel. He's reciting Hallel because of the miracle that took place on this day. Therefore, Rav Soloveitchik submits the following Chiddush. There are two categories of mitzvahs. There's a chiyuv and a kiyum mitzvah. Sometimes, and this is rare, you can have a kiyum mitzvah without a chiyuv mitzvah. And this is what the Meiri has in mind. That if a person feels so overwhelmed with gratitude because of the miracle that he experienced, then Rashoy, he's allowed to set up a day of Hallel for every year. And although it's certainly not a chiyuv Hallel, and therefore there would be no bracha on this Hallel, but nevertheless it's a kiyum. And the kiyum mitzvah permits you and even encourages you to recite Hallel. Therefore, Rav Soloveitchik says the following, that if there's any possibility of reciting Hallel, then we have to make the following two, on Yom HaTzmud, we'd have to add the following two stipulations. Number one, it's only going to be Durabbanon, it cannot be Doraisa. We're not experiencing that miracle on every fifth of year annually. And number two, it's not a chiyuv, but it's a kiyum. That's if you accept that the Me'iri is correct. Now again, Rabosai, I'm not going to tell you that I've read through this entire 10-page tshuva of Rav Avad Yosef. However, what I would tell you is the following. Rav Avad Yosef claims, and you know his erudite scholarship, he quotes everybody in Who's Who, that when the Gemara in Pesachim says, Tiknu Lahem Li Yisrael, it's referring to a Kol Yisrael, a miracle of salvation that the entire community of Israel experienced. And he has a whole presentation about Hanukkah, that Hanukkah somehow impacted on the entire Jewish community of Klal Yisrael. And he says, point number two, it's got to be something miraculous that happens. Even though Hanukkah l'chora was al piderech hateva, and yet we recite Hallel, that's different because of the Beis Hamikdash, and he has a whole presentation in with great scholarship, as we said before, that whenever the Mikdash is restored, that's considered a miracle. That's a miracle for all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Rav Avadya Yosef insists that even according to Meiri, who recognizes the validity of a kiyum mitzvah, he says that only applies when it's a miracle. Miracle means it's got to be shalal piderech hateva. And according to all other Rishonim, other than Meiri, it only applies when the entire Gadz Tzibur of Klal Yisrael experiences deliverance. In the case of Hallel on Yom HaTzmut, he says you might argue that 600,000 Jews in the Yishuv experienced a salvation and deliverance, but it was not something that impacted on all of Klal Yisrael. And even if you go with the Meiri, that you can accept upon yourself a self-imposed Hallel because you experienced an overwhelmed by a miracle, that's only if it was clearly Shalo Al Pi Derech HaTefa. And therefore, Rav Avad Yosef is not willing to tolerate Hallel in any shape or form in the structure of tefillah. What he allows is that after the tefillah is over, you can recite various chapters of Tehillim to express gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fortunate situation in the aftermath of the establishment of the state of Israel. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, on the other hand, and with this we'll conclude, if you take a look on pages 21 and then fast forward to 23, at the bottom of page 21, he quotes a Yerushalmi in Shvius. He had made reference to this Yerushalmi earlier, that there will be Hallel at the time that the exiles of Israel will return to Eretz Yisrael after they cross Nachal Mitzrayim. A very enigmatic statement that only after the people of Israel will cross the Nachal Mitzrayim, then will be a mitzvah of Hallel. Then it will be considered Nigolim. And Rav Soloveitchik claims, what do you say?
What does Rav Avadya say about Tachnu, though?
He doesn't address the issue of Tachnun at all. Again, I didn't finish the tshuva, so maybe it appears at the end of the tshuva, I don't know. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik says the following, and this is at the very end of the article on page 23. He says that the recitation of Hallel is obligatory only when A, the redemption will affect and impact the entire Jewish nation, and that will be realized only at the time of Yemos HaMashiach. And true, he says, that the establishment of the State of Israel affected the lives of Jews throughout the world. However, he says, that's not a tzibur salvation or deliverance. The tzibur as a tzibur is only going to come at the time of Yemos HaMashiach when the Jews cross the Nachal Mitzrayim. In other words, without diminishing the significance of the establishment of the state and how it impacts on the lives of Jews throughout the entire world, at the time that Rav Aaron wrote this article, there were 12 million Jews counted in the world. However, it only impacted their lives as Yechidim. And he says that as Yechidim, certainly we can accept the Me'iri, which again, Rav Avad Yosef is not willing to accept the Me'iri, that a Yachid who experiences a salvation is Mekayim a mitzvah of Hallel, again without a bracha. So therefore a Baron would have a lot of tolerance for reciting Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut without a bracha, and that would be appropriate for the people, especially for the people who experience that miracle, based on the Gemara Pesachim as the Me'iri understood it. However, to convert Yom HaTzmaut, the fifth of year, into a day of a Chiyuv Hallel, for that, he says, we need that, it's not just the Sach HaKol, the total number of individual Jews that were spared, we need that the Tzibur itself experience a salvation, and that experience of the Tzibur is left for, and we're waiting for it daily, for the Yemos HaMashiach, and that's why the Yerushalmi says that only at the time of the Yemos HaMashiach will there be a Chiyuv of Hallel, which means Hallel with a Bracha. So just to summarize, it seems that we have three approaches to Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut. One approach is that of Rabbi Shulam Roth. He assumes that even if the Ness and from the saving us from the Tzarif impacted large parts of the population, but not the entire population of Israel, that still necessitates Hallel, and apparently Hallel Do'oraisa with a Bracha. However, Rabbi Yosef is not willing to tolerate Hallel even without a bracha, as it's integrated into the fabric of tefillah. And then we have Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in the middle opinion, and he says that Hallel is not obligatory on Yom HaTzmaut, but we can accept Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut in the light of the Me'iri as a self-imposed kiyum without a chiyuv. And the kiyum without a chiyuv will allow us to say Hallel even if it's integrated into the fabric of tefillah, but only without a bruch. That's, I think, the summary of these three opinions.
Fantastic.
Okay, then. Good. Thanks. Now, I just want to read to you a few lines in the tshuva of Rav Yosef. Again, this, I'm just pulling out something from the middle of a very long tshuva. He writes about the concept of a gmar geula, complete redemption. He speaks about the fact that Klal Yisrael recited Shir at the Yam because that was a complete redemption. Zekelim Yam Veyu, not only on a physical level of deliverance, but also on a spiritual level, in which the Jewish people recognized the Yad Hashem, Ras Hashiv Chalayam. And when the Rambam speaks about Yemos HaMashiach in Perek Tes Milchus Tshuva, he writes, Lo Nis'avu Yisrael Yemos HaMashiach HaKidei She'anuchu Mimamlechoyos, etc., etc., She'enam Menichim Osam Lasak B'Torah B'Mitzvahs. And therefore he writes, Harbe Mishlome Emuda Yisrael, many Orthodox and observant devout Jews, Asher Roim, that look at the situation in the state of Israel, Shadayin Shchinta Begalusa, the Shchina is still in Golus, is Loma Noagim Shalom Lomar Hal Bechlal Biomatzmaut Vitaimam Imam Lerov Yagonam Vitsaaram Amatzavedo Aruchani. They actually are in a state of anguish, which is not appropriate for the recitation of Hallel, it's antithetical, because of the spiritually low situation, Shanachna Nesunim Bo Kayom. He says, therefore, Ein Lezeh Dimyon L'Nes Chanukah, because at the time of the Nes Chanukah, Kol Ha'om Hikiru V'Yodu B'Hashkochas Hashem Yisbarach Aleihem. It had a tremendous spiritual impact to arouse the Jewish people to a sense of acknowledging God. And so far, unfortunately, today, Aim, he says, to recite Hallel B'toch HaTfilah, in the middle of Tfilah on Yom HaTzvut, he says, even below Bracha, is really problematic. And he quotes the piece in the Haggadah that we just read, B'chol Dovdar, Kom Aleinu L'chaloseinu. And he speaks about the Tzorer, you know, our enemies that, first of all, on a physical level, threaten to destroy us, and on a spiritual level, try to be Mesis, Es Yisrael Midarkei Hashem. There are secular movements that are anti-religious that try to influence the religious Jews to stop and terminate their dedication to Torah and so forth. He says, therefore, we're not in the throes of Geula. There's no Geula Shlema. Let's not say that we experience that we can declare the Geula. And therefore, Ein L'Taken Lomar Halel B'Toch HaTfilah Afilu B'Lo Bracha. Rak, he says, Efshal Lomar Mizmorei Halel L'Yachar Siyum HaTfilah B'Li Bracha. There's no problem reciting various chapters of the Halel after Siyum HaTfilah, after Tfilah is over, and that was my Rebbe's Minog. B'Li Bracha. And he says, Poshet Shein Lanu Lihikoneis B'Sofik Bracha L'Vatola. And he goes on to say that nevertheless, the recitation of Hallel, or shall we say various prokem after Tefillah, is an appropriate response and expression of gratitude, because Ki Medinat Yisrael Kayom Hi Merkaz HaTorah B'Olam Kula. The state of Israel today is the center of Torah for the entire Jewish world. V'rivos bachurei chemed mituvei banenu hayikarim oskim b'torah yomam v'layla b'yeshivos hakdoshos v'atorah mechazeres alachsanya shalah. And this is no doubt, if I can add, true of the Sephardic Jews even more than the Ashkenazic Jews, how much, you know, what a revolutionary, a revival of the study of Torah for hamone bachurei Yisrael. And I see this, I witness this on a daily basis in Har Nof, the, you know, where Avad Yosef Olav Shom used to live, that in our neighborhood, we see how many thousands upon thousands of yeshiva students, Sephardim and even Ashkenazim, are gravitating towards the Batei Midrashes to learn in yeshivas, full-time learning. This is certainly something that was made possible by the establishment of the State of Israel. And therefore, it is appropriate to express our gratitude on Yom HaTzma'ut, but again, not in the formal, shall we say, prose of Hallel, not in the logic of the mind and the halachic innuendos and minutiae, you know, the fine restrictions of Hallel and so forth. And then he goes on to say that in addition to the spiritual challenges that we face here in the modern state of Israel, There's also the physical and military campaigns. Here he says, "Miu kevin shekama alf alofim me'achenu b'nei Yisrael nergu b'marachos Yisrael Hashem yinkom domam ein lanu l'kvoa miras hal b'bracha." You know, in the face of all the tragedies of thousands upon thousands of our Jewish brethren who have died and shed their blood here in Israel for the state of Israel in the various wars and campaigns and terrorist acts, we cannot get ourselves to be so excited about the state of Israel as to say that we now could make a bracha of Hallel and recite Hallel with a bracha out on the Geula. And Mikol Shkein, he says, and how much more so Shatarich Eir Shahuchas Medina Israel Kemedina Ribonit V'Atzma'it Eino Yom Shenigalu Mitzarasim. If we go back to the Gemara in Psachim, which day was singled out for the Emir of Hallel? It's Yom Shenigalu Bo Mitzarasim. He says the Milchama Nimshachachachach B'Yeser Se'es. After the 5th of Iyar, on the original day of the establishment, the Declaration of Independence, that's when the wars took on a whole new impetus with a fierce Mikan Noflu Chalolim Nebuch. We lost so many Jewish lives, Alidei Oyvenu Hamakifim Osanu, because of the enemies that surrounded us. Therefore, even though Hachrazat HaMedina is Yacholnu in the footsteps, in the aftermath of the declaration of the state, we were able, Liklot Olim Chadoshim, to now absorb the refugees from various countries, Lekabetz Kol Yosenu, and especially Miartzot Arav, and not only from the Mediterranean, Middle Eastern countries, but also Mivdinot Europa, from European countries. And he doesn't mention Russia because of that was premature, but he says, Sridei Cherev Plitei HaShoah, Mikol Mekom, nevertheless, as great as this is, that we now have a place of refuge for the Jewish people, Ein HaSimcha Shleima, we don't have a full Simcha that would justify Hallel, because we have to look at the spiritual plight and the difficulties we're facing on the religious front, and at the same time, the very frightening enemies and sensitive security situation that faces the state of Israel on all its borders, and as the enemies try to fulfill their desire to destroy the state, Rachmana Litzlan, Hashem should certainly protect us and save us. He goes on to quote the Chazon Ish in this context, and he basically says that we're still in a state of shiflus, we're still in a state of chatoenu bazman hazeh, we're still not dedicated and completely observant in the state of Israel, and therefore einonu rashoim l'kvo yom halel bebrachos midei shana v'shana. And not only that, even if you want to mention those very few poskim who accepted Rabbi Shalom Rat, it still would be a chashash of a brachal of atol sofik brachos lahokel. And he goes on to quote a few of the greats, like the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim of then, Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Hirsch Frank, who also was manig, his minig in his base measure is not to say Hallel on Yom HaTzmut, and he says, because Dam Yisrael Nishpach Lerov Bavonoseinu Arabim, and also Mipat HaMatzavadati Bamedina, the lack of religious observance and love of Judaism in the state of Israel today. Basically, therefore, he, Rav Avadia Yosef, sides with what he considers the main thrust of normative halacha, psak halacha, the opinion that there should not be a recitation of Hallel. He does, though, say, we call him Niral and Yastaiti Shema Kahol Rotzim Lomar Hal Blo Brocha Achar Tfilas Yidches Ein Limchos Biyodam. He says that to accept a minog in any particular part of Israel, some community, that we should recite Hallel without a bracha after tefillah, we cannot object to that, just like at the time that the original minog of Hallel on Rosh Chodesh was enacted. It was a minog, and when Rav visited the communities saying Hallel in Bavel, he wanted to stop them, but then he said, minog avoseichem b'yadeichem, he allowed it, and he was not makpid on that. And therefore, those communities that want to add Pirkei Tehillim and celebration and expression of gratitude and Hallel without a bracha after davening, that's ein mochin b'yodah, we cannot we cannot make any sort of protest and object to such a minhag. But we're not going to allow halal with a bracha. We're not going to allow halal in the center, in the fabric of tefillah. This is not a you know, we haven't again. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik might see in a different light that we've already progressed. Again, at his time, he called it a yelad hashachar. Maybe by now we're up to amud hashachar. I don't know. Maybe we're in the day of Geula, according to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. It's hard to say what he would declare today. But at least Rav Avad Yosef in this tshuva reflects the fact that we haven't yet really been thrust into the great power of serious, profound Geula. We still have a long ways to go. But on the other hand, you know, the fact that Eretz Yisrael today is a place of refuge and for, after the Holocaust and so forth, And continues to be a great place of refuge. The doors are open. And add to that the fact that it is the center of Torah learning for so many myriads of untold numbers of young Jewish men and now older Jewish men who are dedicated to the study of Torah. That certainly is sibal in the sibal. That certainly is room and reason for celebrating and commemorating this day of Yom HaAtzmaut. And therefore Rav Avadia Yosef, for his part, is going to allow the minhag to continue of reciting Hallel without a bracha following the end of Daf. Okay, we'll conclude it here, and thank you very much.